Okay, well, this will be a first on the podcast. Hello, everybody. It's your cozy little friend from Sportsnet, Jeff Merrick, joined as always by the editor of the Puck Daddy blog, Greg Wyshynski from Yahoo Sports. And normally this is the podcast that may give you gas, but right now, as Greg is on the road by the magical technology of the telephone, he's doing the podcast and is en route to getting gas. Greg, where are you?
I'm in Virginia. I dropped my daughter off after spending Halloween in the city, where she was a mermaid and Ruby was a shark. And if you saw a 6'1" lobster anywhere in New York City, that was me. I was a lobster this weekend. I got a glimpse into the soul of a mascot this weekend, because it really was a mascot sort of costume. Covered face, very plushy. I had children coming up and rubbing my belly, which was very awkward considering what's happened to the Subway sandwich shops. And so I can see why it's a freeing experience to be in one of those mascots costumes, because you feel like you could do goofy stuff and dance and hyperbolic gestures and not feel foolish for it. It's sort of part and parcel with the gig.
You know what? I had that feeling once. It was either Stratford or Winkler, Manitoba. It was one of the hockey days in Canada when I was working for Hockey Night. And I got to wear, just by request, because I wanted to try it and my shift was over and I'm like, screw it, I'm just going to have fun. I got to wear a Peter Puck costume. I got to actually dress up as Peter Puck and walk around a rink. Yeah, it was fantastic. Until almost every single kid came up and punched me. Like, didn't you find that you were I don't know how these, we got to talk to mascots on this program, because as a mascot, you must get assaulted every single game. Because, like, to your point, it's a goofy little mascot guy, which in a lot of ways, especially when you're a puck, an overstuffed puck, you kind of look like a target. And did I take any in the stones? Yes. Repeatedly. From like 6-year-olds and 7-year-olds nonstop. And you can't, it's weird because you can't turn into cranky mascot. You can't scream at kids. You can't do anything like that. You can't terrify them. You honestly, I found that as Peter Puck, I was a sitting target and could do nothing about it other than to eat punches and kicks from kids.
Yeah, you couldn't. That was my experience. All of a sudden become bad Santa while you're wearing the Peter Puck costume, as much as you might want to be. No, I agree, and I could see that being a problem. But I think most of the kids last night that I ran into while dressed as a lobster were mostly in awe, because it's not a costume you expect to see per se, and so. There was a lot of staring and just sort of apprehension. But I did get a few things that I found to be a little disturbing. So first, obviously, is the insult of insults when you're dressed as a lobster and someone addresses you as a crab. I mean, for God's sake, it's two completely different animals. Crabs are really the dregs of society. The crabs are steerage, right? And lobsters obviously not steerage.
You know what, though? When I travel, I occasionally get confused for an American. So I know what you feel like, man. I know what you feel like.
So that was one issue with it. And then the other issue, of course, was the fact that, as you said, I didn't get assaulted physically. I got assaulted verbally. And we went into this Halloween parade for kids. This is a thing for kids. And, you know, my little kids dressed up like a mermaid. That's why I was a lobster. It was like family synergy or whatever. And we're walking down the street, and all of a sudden this dude comes back at me and he goes, I got a nice big pot of melted butter here. I'm like, what is
what?
That?
What?
So he kept on saying, making these references to, like, putting me in a pot and boiling me and I get it's Halloween. I mean, it's time to play along and all that jive. But, like, at the same time, I found it to be 10 shades of disturbing to have a grown man trailing me, making references to me being, you know, boiled and split open and dunked in boiling butter.
Hey, dude, did you see Craig Ludwig last night?
I did not.
Last night or Friday night? I think it was last night. He was dressed up as, who's the guy from the horror movies with the pins in his face?
Oh,
white
pins.
Face with pins everywhere?
Yeah.
Craig Ludwig.
That's a pretty elaborate costume to wear, to be honest with you.
Totally, like for television. Sometimes like an announcer will put on horns. You know, if you're a New Jersey Devils announcer or doing ringside, you put on some horns, maybe throw on some fangs, maybe a little makeup here and there. But to go all the way that Ludwig did, like he was in my mind last night the first star of the night, hands down. That's a tough.
Like, what were the other Sportsnet costumes? By the way, I'm filling up right now with delicious Exxon Regular. If anybody from Exxon is listening, it's one of my preferred gasolines on the road. Our friends at Exxon. I mean, I think they've come a long way since that oil spill that killed all those seals and seagulls and waterfowl. Come over. And also, I understand that their captains of their ships are now at least 15% less drunk. So
give
if you
us,
are from Exxon listening to this,
oh,
you're probably not going to give me anything anymore. But again, you make a fine gasoline.
In the industry, Greg, what I'm about to ask you is called ambient sound. Give us a little bit of the sound of Greg filling up his gas tank right now.
Here you go. You ready?
Yeah.
Do you hear that? That's the liquid that wars are fought over entering my car.
I was going to say, that's why a lot of people have gone to fight in the Middle East right there.
That's
what
right.
Greg Wyszynski is doing right there. That is the reason.
That's right.
Because we like it cheap and plentiful, and we don't care about the ethical offshoots.
And that's why
I buy
offshoots. It's the cheapest stuff. Can I just give you a pet peeve, though? I forget how – in Canada, it's all self-serve, right? Jersey's like the only place in the world that still has attendance, right?
No, actually the place right around the corner from me here in Stouffville does full serve.
Yeah, but Stouffville, in all honesty, is the land that time forgot, so I understand that. but for the most part, it's self-serve. Do you guys have the gas pump that demand that you tell them whether or not you want a car wash before you buy your gas?
Well, it's one of the prompts. You get asked if you want a car wash with it, yeah.
I find that to be one of life's great pet peeves, because honestly, like, there have been times when it's pouring out, just pouring rain, like torrential downpour monsoon time, and I have a gas pump asking me if I want to get a car wash. And I feel like in 2015, there needs to be some sensor or something that can say, hey, by the way, it's pouring out, and you look like a total asshole asking anybody if you want to have a car wash right now. That's just my thought.
Is that like the equivalent that, okay, so you hitting no on that prompt, is that the equivalent of what everyone goes through every day when they go through their email and have to delete spam? Is that essentially gas station
right.
spam?
That's right. But no, it's not even spam. It's you can hear me turning on the car and all the safety features turning on. It's not even spam. It's those offers that you get from places that you actually like and go to. That you're just too lazy to shut off the daily email from them. Like, my gym literally sends me an email every day about amazing offers or, you know, hey, are you getting healthy? To which I'd probably say no. But it's like that. It's like, it's not spam per se. It's not Nigerian prince has found diamonds under his bed. It's more along the lines of like, oh, I really wish that I had told, you know, Old Navy that I only shop there when my cousin, my niece needs something. You know, one of those things.
Okay, so. You know what? This the last goofy request, and then we'll actually talk about hockey. One of my favorite programs in the 80s was a show called Night Ride, which was a late night show for stoners and drunks, which appeared on Global Television, which was essentially, along with a cool saxophone track in the background, a guy driving around in a car and a cameraman in the passenger seat, just documenting everything that's happening at night. I loved it. It was like,
and the car talks, right? And it has
No, that's Kit. No, that's Knight Rider. It's just totally different.
Oh, all right. Okay.
You can look it up. So give us a little bit of Greg Wyszynski driving back home from Virginia. Give us a little radio surfing sound.
Well,
take us through, spin us through the dials here, Casey Kasem.
Oh, yeah, I understand that probably Night Ride is probably a soothing program, right? A guy just waxing poetic about life and its travails, like a junior league Travis Bickle kind of thing, right? Just
mm-hmm.
one of those situations.
Yep.
I'll do the same thing here. I'm driving down the Dulles Toll Road in Virginia, and what goddamn highway robbery this stupid road is. And the tolls increase pretty much every month. It's built out through the middle of Bumble F, Virginia, where they don't even have cars, I don't think. They just walk from farm to farm. And it always causes the biggest traffic jam in life because the last toll before this toll road is only about 75 cents. And then you get on this monstrosity, this boondoggle, and it costs like $7 to get on this road just because it's the only way to reach the outer reaches of the DC exurb. So F this road, F all of it. Was that
wow.
sort of in the vein of Knight Rider?
No, I kind of, well, a little bit, but there wasn't really narration with it. I just wanted to hear what was on the radio locally. I'm always interested in local radio.
I don't really listen to the radio or podcast, per se. I'd like to be alone in my thoughts.
All right, let's get to hockey. I'm going to go all meta on you. A little bit later on the program, we're going to play your one-on-one interview with Danny Ryland, who's the commissioner of the National Women's Hockey League. Also the GM of the New York Riverettes. She played hockey at Northeastern.
Did you say Riverettes or Riveters?
Isn't it Riverettes?
It's the Riveters, like Rosie the Riveter.
I thought it was the Riverettes. It's Riveters?
Yeah, Riveters.
So much I know.
I said Riverettes, like Albany's all day.
Like Albany?
I was giving you a guess.
She's really branching out. Her dad worked for Tampa, the Lightning organization, for a while. I'm going to go like, this is like classic radio 101. Tell people what you're going to do, do it, and then talk about how you did it. What are we going to hear in this interview later on, Wish?
Well, we had a good talk about the league and where it is in its first few weeks. The chat with her happened about, you know, a little over a week ago, and you know, got into sort of the specifics about the criticism of the league. I mean, when I went out to Connecticut and covered opening night, I was sort of taken aback by a couple of things. I was taken aback by the outpouring, you know, on the positive tip of people that were genuinely happy to see the league start, see players get paid, for it to be kind of the U.S. Olympic League versus the Canadian-centric Canadian Women's Hockey League. And just, you know, there was a genuine good feeling surrounding this league existing. And then I saw the flip side of it, which was not only the cynicism that the NWHL will never succeed and will fold after a year because they're trying to be bold and pay the players, but this active sort of rooting for the league to fail. And it was very misogynistic and just kind of ugly. Some of the responses I saw on social media.
Really? Where do you see that? I haven't seen any. I haven't seen any of that.
Yeah, but it's not. It's the clear vocal minority. But it's there, and it's weird, and it was sort of this angry response in some cases to us even covering the league. And I just didn't get that. So we talked to Danny about that. And then we also talked about an interesting angle on this league, I think, is the fact that women's hockey is more physical than people let on. Because the first thing you hear about women's hockey is that it's no hitting. It's a no-hit league.
That's not true. It's not true.
It's not true. As Hillary Knight told me once, it's only no hit if you're as big as she is. If you're smaller, you can get away with a lot more stuff. But if you're a big physical player, and it's obvious they're going to call it. There's a lot of stuff after the whistles. There's a lot of jostling, a lot of physicality to it. But we went right to the heart of the issue, which is, don't you think more people would watch women's hockey if you just allowed fighting? Because there've been fights.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
And so me and Danny kind of rapped about that for a while too, about whether or not we'll see fights in this league and if that would be, because I said this there, I think in the interview or after it, every time you have a start, I know where we are with fighting. Okay. I know where the numbers are. I guess 40% down from last year, clearly yeah. being phased out of the game, what have you. But whenever you start a new league or start a new team, that's exactly where they run to. They run to fighting. They market the fighters, they market the physicality, they market the violence. It's the easiest sell you could possibly have, which has always been why I've been baffled by the NHL running away from it. But I guess that's what happens when you start getting hit with lawsuits. So we talked about how this is a startup league and how you could probably break through in ways that they haven't currently broken through if the physicality and violence and fighting were something that they actually trumped up a little bit. So we got into that as well.
That's an interesting one, because I always wonder this. If the NHL started today, would they start with fights? We've played this game before. If the NHL started today, would this exist? Would that exist? I always wonder, if the NHL started today, would there be fighting, Wish? I don't think there would.
There probably wouldn't be. I mean, I think, or listen, there would be, because it's a natural extension of the physical game. But it would probably be more like when we see a fight in baseball or in the NBA, where it's an ejection and a suspension for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's always going to be fighting of some sort, but it would be probably already legislated out of the game.
It would be one and done. That's what I think it would be. It would be
without
one and done.
And then additional stuff, maybe like a game for it.
Yeah, and it's heading that way anyway.
Yeah, and you know what? There's already stories being written about it, and there's going to be more stories written about it. But if you've listened to this podcast, we've kind of said the same thing for years. That's why we were all, at least for me, I'm not going to speak for you, but at least for me, like any time the idea of increasing the penalties for fighting came up, I'm like, why? I mean, if you were paying attention to the numbers, from the moment at which teams stopped trying to imitate the Brian Burke Anaheim Ducks to now, it's been on the decline. And the more and more players that come up through the system not needing to fight to get here and then not having fights in their various levels coming up here, of course it's going to leave the game. It's going to, and my only prayer for the last decade, knowing where the wind was blowing on this stuff, was just let it happen organically. Don't try to force it out of the game, because it's going to be gradually declining anyway.
I think what began the hastening of the exit of the fighter is the rules changes.
Yeah,
more than anything
totally.
Else, and the speed, and the fact that you can't. I mean, you can't really afford to carry a slugger. Like the fourth line is no longer, well, you know what, it's garbage minutes, and we'll have our fighter on there, and he'll get out there, and you know, every now and then he'll scrap. I mean, look at a guy like Sean Thornton. How many games is he going to play this year? 30, maybe?
Yeah.
He knows it. He knows this is his farewell loop. That this is it. I mean, I'm sure he's settled with it.
The other sea change that's going to happen is going to be in fandom, because part of the whole fighting debate is how many of us, meaning me and you, are Neanderthalic mouth foamers who are, you know, complaining about an arcane form of hockey that no longer exists, and how many of us are going to be in the minority. If you think about it like this, a 16-year-old fan, okay, was born roundabouts 99, 2000, somewhere in that neighborhood, talking about fans of this season, okay? Mm-hmm. That means within 8 years or 9 years, they're going to be prime-time, mid-20s, buying tickets, starting a family age. These people will not have grown up with fighting as we grew up with it, or even as people, as millennials that grew up in the 90s grew up with it. They'll not know line brawl. They'll not know Troperdomi. None of this will be anything that they understand. Once that happens, not only will it be phased out of the game, it'll be phased out of the majority of fans' minds too, and that's the moment in which the game really changes, and people like you and me will probably be crotchety old men, because we'll continue to complain about the intensity of rivalries not being what they were and know why it is, but you'll have an entire generation of fans that won't understand it, that will know rivalries as they are and not have the frame of reference for, well, they used to just leave blood on the ice when they punched each other in the face.
Yeah, it does feel a little weird when a game is positioned as, and you see this Wednesdays on NBC, rivalry night, and all the marketing around it is, you know, line brawls and bench clears and, you know, blood and torn up jerseys. And then they play the game and there's like, you know, four minor penalties.
Right. It's like matching roughing minors at 1958 of the third period in a game that's been settled. And you're like, whoa, things are getting dicey.
They're getting at each other. These two hate each other. In the couple of minutes here, Wish, that we'll distract you from driving home safely. Anything grab your attention over the weekend in Puck?
Well, I didn't quite understand any of the brouhaha about Phil Kessel not being honored in Toronto. Like, you guys know, you guys aren't dummies, right? Like you know what
he's gonna
happened
get booed
in Toronto during his time there.
Yep.
You know that they've done everything they can to turn the page, and you know that the last thing that team wants to do is give yet another chance during this time of good feelings and positive momentum and 5-year rebuild, give yet another chance for people to file another protest vote. You know, they protest voted Ronnie Wilson out of town, and they protest voted Carlisle out of town, and the jerseys have been thrown on the ice. Like, I don't see this as the franchise slighting Phil Kessel. Like, I'm going to imagine at some point, when this team gets back to a competitive era, that maybe they can look back and say, wow, Phil really did a good job for us during that time he was here. But at this
time's
moment...
Time's not now.
What?
No, the time isn't now to do that.
No, it's not.
Right
and
now.
I don't quite get the notion that, you know, the franchise looks petty for not doing it. It's all about turning the page and not allowing for that thing that happened last year. And as someone who came from the land of PR bullshit, like, I get it.
When you work in game operations and you're planning something like this, I remember the first one that sort of raised eyebrows at the Air Canada Centre was the return of Darcy Tucker as a Colorado Avalanche, and they did in one of the whistles a nice little montage for Darcy Tucker. And you know, for a lot of people, it felt weird. It felt strange. Like, why are we saluting someone who's no longer a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs? But then I think people really started to dig it. But you always sort of have to calibrate, okay, what is the response going to be? Darcy Tucker is one thing from a very positive era from the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're a competitive team led by Matt Sundin, you know, medium playoff success year in and year out. That comes from a happy place where fans remember the rivalry with the Ottawa Senators that, you know, always came out in favor of the Toronto Maple Leafs. But the Phil Kessel era was dark. Like,
yeah,
Phil,
was,
in a lot of ways,
bad.
is a reminder of how bad it was.
Oh God, it was dark as night, and it included one of the single worst playoff moments for the team in franchise history.
Totally.
Yeah.
All right.
I will say that, like, you know, again, it's all about context. There's not one straight ahead simple answer for how you should respond or how it seems to respond when players come home. I will say that if you really want to see pettiness, look at the way the Penguins handled Yager for years and years and years. That was very petty, especially because it was a situation in which their own shortcomings of the franchise hastened his departure. And then my favorite story of all time about beloved players returning, Jeff Halpern, okay, is one of the most innocuous he's Jeff Halpern. I mean, we know him for having played in Washington for many, many moons. We know him as a good energy for liner. We know him as
face
as
offs.
One of the few,
face offs.
Yeah,
face offs.
Guys,
face offs.
One of the Jewish NHL players. When he left the Capitals and signed, I want to say it was in Dallas. He returned to Verizon Center, and as the story goes, George McPhee, the general manager at the time, who, as history is showing, may have made a bad decision once or twice in his tenure there.
Oops.
He ordered the game ops people not to announce the I think it was Dallas, the Dallas Stars lineup that night in introductions, just because Halpern was in the starting lineup. And he didn't want to.
Come on.
I don't know if Halpern ended up being in the starting lineup that night or not, but the way it was told to me was McPhee said, "Don't announce Dallas, because I don't want to cheer for Halpern's name."
But then they brought him back. But then they brought him back.
And then they brought him back. Right? Yeah. So
yeah, it was Dallas, but then they brought him back a few years later, 4 years later.
Yeah, insane, right? So that was the way it was. So I'm trying to say is that there's really, really bad ways to handle things, and then there's just simple acknowledgement of, this is a thing that we should all, bygones be bygones. We shipped him out of town. We gave him what he wanted in his heart of hearts, and so let's all just move on.
All right, and we got to move on too. By the way, before we let you go, are we calling this a Sunday podcast or a Monday podcast?
Well, I tried to make it a Monday podcast when we started to do these, but then you kept on referencing Sunday. So I'm gonna call it like the weekend wrap up. Start and also start your week podcast is what I would probably
All right.
say it is.
We need a catchy name for that. So for people that are way more creative than we are, and by that I mean Patrick West. Patrick, come up with a snappy name for it, because me and Greg got a lot of dumb going on between the years.
We got a lot
wish
of
travel
on.
Safe. We got a lot of dumb travel
you,
safe.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Officially out. November 1st was the day. Take your eye off the puck, and if you're listening to this. On Monday at around nooner time, I believe your boy is doing an AMA on Reddit on
Ooh.
Our /hockey, talking about the book and talking about
nice.
The show and Puck Daddy and all this stuff. So take your eye off the puck. My book is finally out, like officially now. And thanks to everybody who's purchased it. The numbers are ridiculously good so far, and I really appreciate that. And that's really all I have to say. I'm driving home tonight. Woohoo! Going to be listening
be
to
safe.
Listening to another baseball game, despite the fact that I hate baseball again in a big way. Oh God, do I hate
baseball away.
Right now?
I stayed away from it on purpose, Greg. I stayed away, stayed away. So good luck with the drive. Good luck with the book.
Thank you, boy. Thank you, everybody. Bye.
We'll talk to you on the Tuesday when this podcast returns. And out of the corner of my eye, I see Tyler Johnson has just made it 4-1 for the Tampa Bay Lightning over the Carolina Hurricanes. Lions has got a little bit jiggled up there by John Cooper as well, by the way. Triplets no longer. Johnson playing with Nikita Kucherov and Alex Killorn. And Andre Palat, one of my favorite players in the NHL, goes up to the top line, left wing, with Steven Stamkos and Ryan Callahan. Who is it? John Michael Lyles, about 20 minutes ago, took a puck in the face off a Ryan Callahan shot. I haven't seen it again. I've been doing the podcast, so I haven't really seen him.
We have got
out, other than outside of the corner of my eye. Haven't seen him return to the ice yet. But this Carolina-Tampa game has been pretty interesting. Actually, most of the Tampa games that I've, well, really in the last few years, but that I've watched this year have been really interesting. Dallas is still the team to watch this year. They're just flat-out fun. We're standing by the way, for John Shannon, who's going to join me here in a couple of seconds.
He's there.
Dallas is just out a flat-out fun team to watch. Offensively gifted, that's true. They can score in bunches. A lot of different personalities on the team. That's always fun. Two Finnish netminders who... I know it looks good early, but I'm still not sold on. But man, does Dallas give up chances. Game in and game out. Like, Dallas is the one team, unlike some teams where, okay, they're up to maybe 3 pucks in the third period, time to shut it off and go watch something else. Yeah, don't. Because Dallas can either come back and win or surrender a lead like that. And it must drive Lindy Ruff absolutely crazy. But Dallas is that team. That gives up the chances and gets a lot of the chances. And for a viewer who likes that kind of hockey, and who doesn't, it ain't buttoned down, folks. The Dallas Stars are a lot of fun. Speaking of buttoned down, our favorite button down on NHL ties is our man John Shannon, my colleague at Sportsnet. John, how are you, sir?
That was smooth, Jeff. Very smooth.
Thank you. And so were you yesterday on the world's greatest pregame show. if you didn't get a chance to see it, you have to see. Okay, so our stylist, Deb Berman, paid this local artist in Toronto, I can't remember how much it was, hundreds of dollars, to carve a pumpkin in the likeness of John Shannon's face. But, John, I thought you added the nicest touch to it by carving off a piece of one of your trademark button-down shirts and wrapping it around what would have been the pumpkin's neck. That was
a
nice touch.
Well, you know what, I mean... You know, Grapes has the high collars and the jackets, yeah. You know. Some of us have button-down shirts.
And you got you always been a button-down guy, John? As long as I've known you, you have.
Well, here's why. I became a button-down guy when I went on the air because mm-hmm. I hated watching television, and there was that every once in a while a stupid collar up. And it drove me nuts. So I said, well, how do you fix it? Saying, well, you know, if you always have button-downs, the collar will never be up.
So this was a deliberate TV thing then from you.
Totally. Totally.
Really? Okay, yeah. Back when you were an EP then on Hockey Night, if someone wore a button down, would you have a problem with it?
No, I wouldn't have.
Did anyone ever wear button downs? I'm trying to think of anyone in hockey media that's worn button downs before.
No, never. Never. I mean, which made it even easier. And I don't mind saying, my 5 years in New York, walking down Sixth Avenue or walking down Madison or Lexington, how many guys did you see in blue blazers and button downs and, Oxford cloth shirts and yellow ties?
Well, fair point. That's fair point, John. That's fair point.
That's how it happened.
I want to get to actual hockey, but I do have to ask you, the one nice thing about doing these Sunday night podcasts is in the corner of my eye, I get a hockey game on. And Hometown Hockey is on right now, Rogers with the Montreal Canadiens and the Winnipeg Jets. And I'm just finishing wrapping up watching Carolina and Tampa, and I'm watching the Carolina broadcast, and it's John Forslund and Tripp Tracy. And I have to ask you, put on your TV exec hat here for a second, because we end up talking about television and broadcasters and what people like and what they don't like. From an executive producer's point of view, if you're doing a regional game, how do you want your broadcast crew to call it?
60-40. Mm-hmm. 60 for the home team, 40 for the visitors. And a lot of teams have a different approach than that. Some might go 80-20 or 90-10, but I like 60-40. But here's the reason why, and I used to try to tell people this, and it really irks me when I hear local radio guys go absolutely bananas when their team scores, and they don't even flinch when the other team scores, because at the end of the day, there's a good chance that the other team might get to the playoffs, and the whole hockey world wants to follow them, mm-hmm. and the whole hockey world should follow them, and the other team scoring, it's not good for your team, but it's not that bad, and it's not evil. It's... I don't think we do a good job in our game of promoting the product. You only promote your own product. You don't promote mm-hmm. the whole product.
How much of that, though, John, if I can interrupt, how much of that comes from ownership, though? You're there to cheer on our team.
A lot. But and you and I think we've had this discussion on one of these before when I was in studio, Jeff.
Yep.
Is that if you own a McDonald's franchise, and I know because you go to McDonald's all the time.
Oh yes,
if
John.
If you own a McDonald's franchise, and you happen to have a plumbing issue and you're closed down for 2 days, the sign will say, "Hey, this McDonald's is closed. Yeah. Please go to the Burger King across the street." No. They'll tell you to go to the next McDonald's. So when the Philadelphia Flyers are eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs, or the Philadelphia Flyers aren't playing this night, and we've got a national game that involves the evil Pittsburgh Penguins against the Detroit Red Wings, the Flyers, in my mind, have a responsibility to promote it. And not everybody in Philadelphia agrees with me.
Surprise, surprise. Okay, John, finish this sentence then. The best thing about hockey in 2015 is blank.
Connor McDavid. How was that? Was that quick enough?
My answer might have been the same as well, but why specifically?
Because he has, at the age of 18 years old, he has become, in many ways, not necessarily the face of hockey, because he's still an 18-year-old, but the body of hockey. He does things that men double his age can't do. He has the ability to stick handle like Patrick Kane. He has the reach of Rick Nash. He has the mind of Wayne Gretzky. He is, without a doubt, in my mind, the single most influential player in the game today.
And at which point, then, I would submit, and maybe the answer is even quicker than Sidney Crosby, at what point do you think we're talking about Connor McDavid and saying, there's Connor McDavid, comma, the best player in hockey?
We might be doing that by Christmas. Seriously, he's that good.
Yeah. Well, and have you seen, as it's one thing to do in junior, and folks, if you don't know, specifically listening stateside, John and I do CHL hockey, so we saw plenty of Connor McDavid since he was first drafted by the Erie Otters and have covered a number of his games. You always wonder, okay, the kid can do this against the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds. The kid can do this against the Niagara Ice Dogs and the Barrie Colts, but can he do this against, you know, insert NHL team here?
It took about four.
Well, yeah, and but it only took about four games. Like, I think of the last, you know, first-round pick that had a really, you know, interesting transition. I think of Nathan McKinnon. And it wasn't until about game between 25 and 29 that you saw Nathan McKinnon really figure it out and put it together. It took McDavid four games, John. Four.
Yeah, and in fairness to Nate, he didn't have a great second season.
True.
And so that will be the challenge for McDavid, because by then he will certainly have a target on his back larger than any other target. That to me is the one aspect of all this. I don't think I'm one for hyperbole, but I do find what he's done is so special. I do find what he's done and how he does it and with what ease and simple little ways to move the puck he does so well that sometimes we take for granted. But he just seems to be able to do them so easily, and that to me is what fascinates you. I talked to Todd McClelland about it once, and I said, you know, he seems to have that that ability to go to another speed, and he said the closest guy he reminded of was Marion Gabbert when he started in Minnesota, because Todd was in the Minnesota organization. But when you, and I've never skated, so I can only do what people tell me to do about this. When you do, in fact, accelerate, there are certain parts of your body that, you know, your thighs change how they pump, your butt drops a bit. Well, Connor doesn't do any of that. He just seems to be able to get to that next speed without any change in body language. And that
edges,
really was
John.
Very impressive. Now,
edges. It's all edges. Like if you look at guys, like as they're pushing off, they're accelerating from that back foot. Like the stuff that edge work is doing, the things that kids are being taught now is remarkable. Yeah. Because you're right. Because you see him hit that extra gear, and we're used to seeing, oh well, you know what? He's bending his knees deeper. He's hitting that extra gear.
Yeah.
But you don't see that with Connor McDavid, and you don't see that with Jack Eichel, and you don't see that with Dylan Larkin. You know, the other speedsters around the NHL. You just don't. And the thing that impresses me about Connor, when he was, you know, selected first overall by the Oilers, a lot of people said, well, this is a great thing for Connor McDavid. The benefit of being drafted by Edmonton is he's going where there are established players. He'll play with Taylor Hall. Like, he'll play with these, like, Jordan Eberle and these types. But he's played with Benoit Pouliot, who's been an analytics darling and an underrated player for a lot of years, and another first-round overall pick in Nail Yakupov, who's been a chronic underachiever. But that line is, if it's not the best, you may say it's the most dynamic in the entire NHL, John.
Well, it's good. I wouldn't say that yet. The fact is, in Edmonton, at least Connor's been able, in a very short period of time, is find some chemistry with guys that are prepared to sacrifice their own roles for that of McDavid. You know, Pouliot, who has, let's face it, has become, even though drafted fourth overall, really has become a journeyman, has been able to sacrifice what he thought he should do for the betterment of that line. And I credit McClellan with convincing him. And Yakupov is the one guy who probably has as much vision and close to the amount of speed and understanding of the offensive part of the game as McDavid of any of those guys on the Oilers. And so that kind of combination works. And I also think that Yakupov understands that, the more Connor thrives, the better it is for him. There's a lot of people that wouldn't do that, Jeff. There's a lot of people that wouldn't compromise the way they play the game for the betterment of Connor and therefore the betterment of the team.
The Benoit Pouliot comment is an interesting one, because if you talk to a lot of players that have played with Benoit Pouliot, and you know, we just talked to Colby on Armstrong about it at Sportsnet, and he was talking about, hey, listen, whenever we play with him or played against, this guy has a really high skill set. He's also sneaky tough if anyone wants to get frisky, which is something that not a lot of people know about Benoit Pouliot. But somehow burned into everybody's brain is, oh, there's that guy on the Rangers that took all the bad penalties. And ignored the other, that really good skill set that Benoit Pouliot has.
Well, I mean, how many teams is this now? Just I don't have my.
I know. He's not Mike
Montreal,
Sillinger,
Boston,
but...
Rangers. How many? I mean, so that's why I call him a journeyman. It's not for the style of play. It's just that you know when you bounce around as much as he has, because there every manager thinks, well, look, he was a first round pick. He's got to be better than that. Look at the skills he does have. I mean, people get sold on this, and then they don't get sold on the role that he should play on their team. You know, as I said, all you had to do is look at that goal against Montreal, the one that McDavid set up, to know that this guy has a ton of speed and some skills. And there was one in the Detroit game, I believe, Detroit or Washington, one of the two games, where he took the puck off the boards in his own zone and, you know, took a lot of pressure off the D and did an amazing job. But, you know, now he has to do it consistently, and now he has to do it and does it in such a manner that there's not a lot of pressure on him, because he's playing with Connor McDavid.
Speaking of being sold, are you sold that Anaheim is this bad?
No.
1-7-2 with 4 points?
No. Although playing Nashville tonight isn't going to help, particularly when Nashville loses in overtime to LA yesterday. But they're not this bad. My latest theory is they miss Francois Beauchemin that much, but.
Well, you know what? There's two sides of that too. One, they miss Francois Beauchemin, and two, they replaced him, who's someone, listen, is not the most fleet of foot, and someone have already said the game has passed him by, in Kevin Bieksa.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you recall when Beauchemin ended up in Toronto, what did Bob Murray do in not a short period of time after? He went back and got him back. You know?
Yeah.
So because he couldn't do anything right in Toronto. So I guess I'm waiting for the Colorado, Anaheim trade to take place. I say that with tongue-in-cheek, but, it's one of those ones where you laugh at and say, well, hold on, maybe Francois Beauchemin can only play, in Orange County. Now, he doesn't seem to play. He's having a very difficult time defensively in Colorado, as most guys on the blue line for the Avalanche are. And he was the same way in Toronto. Anaheim seems to be the one place where his style of game agrees with that of the hockey club.
And the Avs lost again tonight to San Jose. 4-3 is the final score. A couple of third-period goals by Brent Burns and Joe Pavelski. And then a lucky one to keep it close by Cody McLeod. It's all over again for Colorado. And that's a fascinating story. The other big one coming in, and this one breaking this afternoon, John, Carey Price injured. Speculation is around a week. Mike Condon's in net for the Montreal Canadiens tonight against the Winnipeg Jets. Crippling for Montreal, or they can sustain for a week without Carey Price?
Well, I mean, this is where you say that thank goodness they won 9 in a row. They do have a little bit of buffer. Same time, Condon hasn't been bad when he's played. Here's what I want to know about this injury, Jeff. Everybody in Montreal is now saying, well, he did it Thursday in Edmonton. Well, what were you doing Friday in Calgary? Why wasn't, was he going to back up and they were going to let Condon, if Calgary blew 27 by him, Condon was going to play no matter what? I mean, that to me, that's a weird one. If it was that bad, then,
Did it happen in Edmonton and then got aggravated against Calgary?
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. Cause he didn't play against the Flames but he was good enough to be backup. I don't know how that works.
But that was the plan all along, right? He was going to get the one and then he was going to back up the next night.
No, the original plan I think was that he was going to, the two games they wanted him to play against Western Canadian teams was the Vancouver for sure. And tonight at home against Winnipeg. I really think he was supposed to play against Calgary, but they changed the plan when they lost so badly in Vancouver, and so then he played against Edmonton, and then he lost that one too. So at least that's what I had been told.
We've got a couple of minutes here left with you, John. A couple of things just sort of shotgun style. I was making the point about Dallas before you came on. They're just so much fun to watch because the game isn't over until the game is really over. Yeah. They give up a ton of chances. They generate a ton of chances. They're a lot of fun to watch. At times, Lindy Ruff must pull his hair out. Where are you at the Dallas Stars?
Oh, no. To me, they're hockey's answer to, you know, the team's answer to three-on-three. They are so much fun to watch. You know, they are, they, I knew I would like Patrick Sharp wearing that green jersey. And, you know, that's, I think it's 4 goals in 3 games now for Patrick. He would fit in perfect. I think Jason Spezza looks faster. Johnny Klingberg is somebody that we've been watching for a year and a half now that we think that he's pretty good. I still don't know how the two Finnish goaltenders are going to work together long term. You know, Jim Nils at the draft when they got the deal done, Jim told me 45-35, and I said, for who? And he said he wasn't sure. You know, it looks like Niemi's the guy right now. At the same time, I mean, you know, I heard you say that, they lose leads. I've only lost twice. So if you can do that, and come from behind, it's pretty good. And I would also suggest that for a market that loves winners and the Cowboys struggling and, you know, the Mavericks struggling a bit, to have the Stars play this style of hockey in that big barn, augurs well for what Jim Leitz and Tom Gilardi are trying to do with the franchise. So to me, that's the right combination. Dallas would love a high scoring team, and that's kind of cool.
You believe in St. Louis, or have you been burned too many times?
Ask me on May the 15th.
No way, man. I'm asking you November 1st.
Well, and the answer is that right now I am. You know, right now I'm sold on them. You know, they're almost the antithesis of Dallas. They win, you know, the 1-0 games and shut everybody down. And then Vladdy Tarasenko, when he's playing, is absolutely electric. Arguably they might have the best defense. You know, Nashville's got a great defense. St. Louis has got a great defense. The Rangers and maybe Montreal. They might be the top 4 teams with defensemen in the National Hockey League. And I can't believe I'm not including the LA Kings with Doughty and Muzzin, but I think for depth purposes, those 4 are the best. And with, you know, Edmondson and Parayko, what they've done is the 5-6. They're so deep on the blue line, they're better with Troy Brouwer than they are with TJ Oshie, because they have more character. And Brouwer's like one of those good bottles of fine wine that you like, Jeff. He's gotten better with age.
He has, and it always seemed like an awkward fit between TJ Oshie and Ken Hitchcock. Yeah. And where he is now thriving under Barry Trotz, it just didn't seem like it was ever going to work with Ken Hitchcock.
The one thing I can tell you that I've heard stories about situations in and around the Blues where Brouwer has done the right thing off the ice, whether it's telling a rookie, hey, show some more respect for veteran players, or show respect here and there. And Brouwer seems to have had a really positive influence on a lot of people in the organization.
He seems like a Hitch guy too, John. Troy Brouwer.
I would suspect, though. I would suspect. So, I mean, and you say, hey, listen, the other night, who's one of the stars? Steve Ott. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, Ken always likes those types of guys that can grind and lead and play and, you know, when in doubt, they're the kind of guys for Hitchcock in many ways, like Keenan used to rely on, you know, on Greg Gilbert and Brian Noonan, you know, and Steph Matto.
Yeah. Well, the thing that Ott's fascinating because, I mean, they've played him with on second line with Dave Backes. They've played him up there with Jori Lehterä, yeah. Where once upon a time we just thought, okay, yeah, Steve Ott, you know, he's, you know, a fourth line guy, but, you know, glorified as a third line guy with the St. Louis Blues. It's not true really going on here.
Well, you know, I mean, there are a lot of people thought by the time he got to Buffalo, his career was almost over. And he seems to have, you know, rejuvenated his career pretty well in St. Louis.
He has. All right, we'll let you get back to your Sunday. Johnny, as always, thank you, sir, and we'll see you this week on the TV.
Okay, Jeff, good talking to you.
There he is, John Chan. Follow him on Twitter at JSportsNet. And if you can find a pumpkin, I think I tweeted it out yesterday. If I didn't, John has it on his Twitter feed. You have not lived until you've seen the John Shannon carved pumpkin with the yellow button-down shirt. And yes, there was a tie attached to it as well. It was genius. Was the highlight of our program yesterday with PJ Stock, the world's greatest pre-game show. Going. All right. The Tampa Bay Lightning have now defeated the Carolina Hurricanes. The final score is 4-3. And with that, we are almost done here on the MBSW Sunday Extravaganza, but not before we hear from Greg Wyshynski. He teed it up earlier. This is his one-on-one with NWHL Commissioner Danny Rylan, who played at Northeastern, who's trying to make a go of it, paying the gals to play the hockey. Four-team league so far. Boston seems to be the class of it. With that, we will end today's podcast. We thank you for joining us. And thanks, John Shannon. Thanks to Greg Wyshynski. And if you're listening, hope you got home safely, Greg, because we have a podcast on Tuesday. Here is Danny Rylan, the NWHL commissioner. Have a great weekend, folks.
Commissioner of the National Women's Hockey League and general manager of the New York Riveters, in fact, too, right?
Yes.
So how do you wear two hats?
I have a big head. No, I don't know. I mean, it's definitely a lot of work, but at first the thought was, you know, it's one less person to train, one less person to pay, and now it's definitely something where I will probably be looking for someone to take over the GM role next year. But it's also nice to see the players every week, to have a pulse on what's happening in the league.
Yeah. Are we to assume that every Riveters trade will be approved then?
I think that's a fair assumption.
Are there going to be trades? I've been trying to figure out the dynamic of a four-team league. So everybody makes the playoffs, right?
Yep.
And it's just so you're playing for seeding is what it is?
Yes.
But it seems like with a four-team league, you know, on the outside you might be concerned, oh, okay, the regular season is sort of whatever before you get to the playoffs. But with a four-team league and the amount of animosity that seems to already be there this early in the season, it sounds like it's going to be a pretty exciting brand of hockey, even if it's not about who makes or misses the playoffs.
Yeah, so everyone makes the playoffs, so I can definitely guarantee you that's going to be exciting hockey, especially having up to three games in one weekend. It's definitely going to be playoff hockey.
Right, but the regular season seems, I mean, it's not as if it doesn't matter, right? I mean, it's like the games so far have been pretty competitive, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I mean, the regular season definitely matters. If for nothing else than to drive attendance for the playoffs too. So every game matters, and you know the athletes will tell you that too.
I saw you at the first game, and it was awesome. And you seemed so happy. You dropped the first puck. You had, you know, upwards of 800, 900 people in the stands. A lot of young girls there. It seems like in that sort of snapshot moment, everything that you wanted from this league was there in one facility.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely try to focus on the positive, so it probably seemed like everything was there, and in the back of my mind, I was, you know, taking mental notes of, you know, and putting out fires or whatever it may be. So, I have to remind myself to stay positive when definitely I'm the kind of person who is a perfectionist and wants to focus on the little things that may not have been
that's a good thing,
as
though.
Awesome. Yeah,
that's
for
a
sure.
Good thing. Okay, so one of the things that we've heard feedback-wise from people that have been reading our coverage of the league is this league is never going to be able to make the money it needs to do the things it wants to do. So what do you say to those people that say, okay, it's great you're paying the players, but you're not going to make enough money to be able to pay the players?
Well, I would say, did you read all the other comments? What was it?
Everything
else is so
everything
positive,
everything else
right?
is super positive. But I mean, I'm interested by that view. Because, I mean, I don't necessarily think it's accurate, but I don't know if I've heard you voice that response to it.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a few different revenue streams, and we need to max out all of them. You know, the WNBA launched in 1998, and their first team turned a profit, or sorry, 1997, and their first team turned a profit in 2010. So it took 13 years for one team to turn
wow.
a profit. So,
and that's what the NBA is backing.
Yeah, so obviously the NBA was had a significant, you know, they were fronting the bleed there, but everything takes time, and 2015 is the best time for women's hockey. The game's never been faster, stronger, more physical, and more professional than it is now. And I think our biggest resource right now is the product on the ice. That's what is going to allow us to efficiently tap all of our revenue streams.
Right. But the sense I get, though, is that these people that might not like the existence of a women's hockey league that are the weirdest thing about when we started writing about this league was the active rooting against your success, which I find creepy. Like, who cares? Like, if you don't like women's hockey, then why are you upset that it exists? Like, who cares, right? So it sounds like, though, that even if things aren't, you know, if it's not, you know, profits, you jumping into piles of money at the end of this year, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah. No, we're building it for the long haul, and the best thing for us is that every 4 years, the women's game's on the biggest stage. And so we are naturally revitalized every 4 years because of that. So, you know, we have a short-term goal, we have a long-term goal, and we're not going anywhere. So for all the haters, you know, they can go comment on other blogs, I guess.
The haters are insane. It wasn't just even on our blog. Like, it was on Twitter. Like, I had people tweeting at me, like, why are you covering this league? Like, no one cares about it, and it's going to go, but it's not for you. It's like people who get upset when a movie is geared towards kids. Like, they're like, oh, it's too childish. I'm like, but maybe you're not the intended audience, and you should be mad that it exists.
And, you know, for every one negative thing I read or hear or see, there are 100 positives. So, I try not to even bog down in that too much.
Right.
You know, there's such an overwhelming response of, you know, thank you so much. This is great that my daughter has the same, goal as my son, or, you know, this is a realistic dream for the next generation. So, I mean, there's so much positive feedback.
I asked them about that, before some of the players, when I was interviewing them for a story, about the idea of when do you see that, or do you see that switch being flipped from it being the role model, inspiration, thank God this league exists story, into a game coverage situation? Does it need to reach that for the league to kind of break through for sports fans, you think? Or is it inseparable from that other narrative?
Well, I mean, we're so new.
Yeah.
This whole conversation is going to be different in a couple months or when we roll into playoffs. So obviously first puck drop is, this is a first. This is, you know, we are breaking, you know, through all these new things. So the narrative definitely changes, and then there become rivalries. And then, you know, we have people writing about, you know, should we have fighting rules? Like, that's awesome that's the new coverage. So it is breaking away from, you know, what has been covered to date. And I think we're all excited. I'm excited to start pitching, you know, have new go-to lines or whatever it may be. You know, you definitely get into a routine of same old questions, same old answers. Well, so
let's pause on fighting. You know, you know that this, you're a marketer. You know how this works. You know, you'd have a million people lined up if there was fighting in a women's league. Every time there's been a fight, and there was that USA Canada fight after the whistle that one time that was on YouTube, it had like a billion views. Yeah. I mean, every time it comes up, there's people that go crazy for it because it's such an anomaly. And it also is sort of a tradition in hockey that when a new league comes up, the first thing they do, or even a new team, I remember when Nashville got a team, the first person they put on a billboard was Stu Grimson. Like, whenever a new thing comes, it's usually fighting that becomes the calling card in order to reach out to fans who are just sort of on that wavelength. Did you ever give a thought to it? Dropping it and dropping gloves? Or
If the game goes there, it goes there. You know, at the end of the day, everyone's a competitor, and everyone wants to win. And as an athlete competing at the highest level, you do get frustrated. You do have emotions, and when it takes over, and if there happens to be a fight, then there's a fight. It's one of those things that's out of our control. And as far as you know, how we're going to handle it, it's something that we'll take in stride.
They because that current rules are you just get kicked out of the game.
Five in a game,
but not a game suspension afterwards. It's interesting. Sort of the NHL way of being like, don't do this, but if you do,
yeah,
we'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I'll just make sure our photogs are lined up if it happens.
Physicality is a cool thing, though, in this league, though. I mean, I think one of the things that people are going to realize real quickly about the NWHL is that it there's no checking, but there is checking, kind of. Like, and there's a lot of little mix-up stuff after whistles, and it's there's animosity, and it's hockey.
Yeah, I mean, there's no open ice hitting, but it's a very physical game. And you know, I've told everyone, if the first two weekends of play, if that was someone's first time seeing women's hockey, it's definitely not going to be their last time.
Thinking about the league here from a video standpoint, so you have the video streaming online, and how's that going?
Good? It's going, yeah. We're getting exponentially better at it
Sweet.
2 weeks.
That's a good thing. A couple of the players mentioned TV as being a thing that they hope to see. Like, I know SportsCenter has covered it a bit. The Connecticut team is literally like plays in the NBC cafeteria, or so it seemed, based on the proximity to their facilities in Connecticut. Where do you see the TV coverage going? I mean, is there anything in the works where you might get games on television?
Yes, there A few things in the works.
Irons in the fire.
Yes, irons in the fire. We're hoping to announce some of these developments soon, but we are talking to a few networks.
Sweet. And how vital is that in year one?
That's huge. Yeah. You know, everybody knows there's a WNBA. We want everyone to know there's a National Women's Hockey League.
Yeah. Would you have lady voices on the broadcasts?
Yeah, I mean, may the best person have the job. You know, I asked the same question about referees or, you know, the officiating for the games. You know, the best person gets the job.
Right. And that should be how it is, no matter what the job is.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we've touched on this before, but I wanted to kind of revisit it because the league is now finally underway. What would make you happy in year one? Like, I know that I'm asking a perfectionist, what would make you happy? And you'll be like, nothing. But what would make you happy in year one? Like, what's the level of success or of impact where you can kind of sit back and take a breath for at least a minute afterwards and be like, okay, we did good this year, and now we've got something to build on here.
Yeah, I think it's the each generation kind of has its own success story. Mm-hmm. So that the players playing in the league, that they're happy, that they are satisfied with everything that we're providing. Mm-hmm. And then that the next generation is wanting to compete in this league when they grow up. You know, I think what's really cool is, you know, most boys grow up wanting to score the game-winning goal in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Right.
Girls up until now have wanted to play 60 minutes every 4 years in that gold medal game.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what we want is for girls to dream of scoring that game-winning goal in Game 3 of the Isabel Cup Championship. So I think that's what's really special. And the more awareness that is around all of it, the better. And I think that's
that'd
what
really
defines
cool.
success. Yeah.
That'd be really cool. Two more for you. I asked some of the players this as well. How much of a global view do you take? Where it's you look at the sport on a global level and you think that this league could help grow it in places around the world?
Yeah, I mean, our New York team is playing a 3-game exhibition series in Nikko, Japan in December. And so we're having our global imprint right away. And I think that speaks a lot for the game and how it's evolved around the world. You know, the Japanese national team got their made it to the Olympics for the first time since 98 this past year, or 2014 in Sochi. And their program's continuing to develop. And the fact that we can send some of the best players from North America out to Nikko, Japan to continue to grow the game says a lot.
And finally, I know you got a boogie. Where did the Riveters rank in the Hockey News top 100 jerseys of all time?
Top 25. We were number 21 of 100 for the New York Riveters jerseys. So that's pretty cool.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Who designed it, by the way?
We had a fan contest. So
and the fans designed it?
A fan designed the Riveters
jersey. There
you
jersey.
Go. Yeah.
It's a league of the people.
Yep.
Daniel Ryland, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
Perfect timing.